This is Jeanette and Jay John, Asian Pop Radio. Tell me what you think of it.
It's the Jeanette and Jay John Show here on Asian Pop Radio.
Yes, Asia Wide Hits 24/7, available online at asianpopradio.com, via our app, free via the App Store.
As well as podcasts if you miss our voice.
Yes, if you do listen to us on podcasts, you can do that via podomatic.com or on iTunes. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you subscribe to us and rate and review. We are very excited because on the show today, we are speaking to one of my radio heroes, Jeanette. I'm totally a radio geek, and you know that. And today
like
we
a
are
geek in general, yeah,
a
definitely
geek
know.
In general, and not even one of the sexy kinds. Just a complete geek, complete ugly, wrinkly geek.
Ew! Again with the wrinkliness. Do you moisturize? Like, what's happening?
I forget to moisturize sometimes. That's why I'm
you need
pruny.
A facelift.
But we are speaking to Dom Lau, who is presenter of Asia Pop 40. There's
Yay!
Obviously two different Asia Pop 40s. One's the English version, and one is the Kanto version. And Dom Lau is the host of the English version. He's famous for being on Channel V Asia.
Yay!
VJ Dom.
Yes.
E News Entertainment.
E-News.
He's worked in Hong Kong, Singapore. I nearly said St. Kilda. He's worked everywhere. He's
if he wants to work at St. Kilda, go for it.
I know, right? Like, he could be doing something completely different there. He has just, you know, he's the man that the people go to in Asia for interviews. So he's interviewed like One Direction, all sorts of people. Like, he is absolutely huge. So he's pretty much dominating half the show today. We're going to have a big long interview about him later on in the program. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. See if you can get a word in.
One. Okay.
Asia Wide Hits 24/7. This is Asian Pop Radio. Download our app free via the App Store on Apple and Android. We are honored to have a guest with us right now on the program. It is Mr. Dom Lau of Asia Pop 40. How are you going, Dom?
I'm doing very well, Jace. Good to be here.
Got
to
be a highlight of the week for me, Dom. I'm a massive radio geek, and I'm probably the only person in radio that actually goes out of their way to talk to other people in radio and hope that everyone else just goes along with me.
Well, I'm really honored that you've tracked me down and found me. This is great. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So, Dom, you seem to be an entertainer at heart. Can I ask you, were you an attention-seeking child, or were you one of the quiet ones?
Oh, Jace, man, I think you and I have something in common. When I say that growing up, I always enjoyed being like that clown of the class, the center of attention. It was always a lot of fun just basically entertaining people. Whether that was, the case for them, I don't know. But as long as I thought I was being entertaining, then I was in my comfort zone. I've always enjoyed, speaking in public. I've always enjoyed. In fact, here's a true story for you, seeing as how we are talking about radio. As a kid, when we used to have, do you remember those like dual tape decks that we used to have on stereos?
Oh, yeah.
I used to record my own radio
shows.
Oh,
me too.
Yeah. So growing up, that's what I would do at home after school. I'd never do my homework. I was never an academic at school. I would always just make these radio shows and, playing my favorite tunes. And sadly, and probably for the best, they never saw the light of day.
Dom, I have to tell you that our radio station was JCJFM because it was for me and my brothers, Jason, Chris, and Josh FM. And we even designed our own logo. Did you go that far?
Oh, sweet. No, I never did that. That's such a good idea. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
We even forced our parents to listen to it in the car on trips, so I'm sure they love that.
I'm sure it made the time go by faster. I'm sure it did.
Well, Dom, music seems to have been a passion for you throughout the years. Can you pinpoint a moment that you had a light bulb, light bulb moment that you wanted to be part of the industry?
Oh, man, there were so many milestones with regard to that. I mean, I remember being, I think it was about 7 years old or so. And I remember my mom taking me on holiday. We passed a record store and I remember her just having a look around at these cassette tapes. And I would do the same. And she said, would you like to have one? I'll buy you one, son. And so I think my very first cassette was Phil Collins.
Oh, wow.
It was a Phil Collins cassette. And I absolutely loved it. I would listen to it all the time, whenever I could. And so that was a major milestone. Another one, I suppose, was when I was in primary school. And my primary school was very music-oriented, very performing arts-oriented. And so my music teacher would always have us performing, Christmas carols and recitals and thematic speaking and whatnot. And it's something that I always enjoyed. And if ever there was a moment, if ever there came a time where I like won an award or something like that, she'd be like the first person I would thank. Because had it not been for my music teacher in primary school, I don't think I would be where I am today. And that's the God's honest truth. But otherwise, other milestones included when Appetite for Destruction first came out when I was about 10 years old. And I heard this rock and roll music for the first time. And I was like, wow, these guys are amazing. So GNR still today remain my most favorite band of all time. And then that just influenced me to listen to more and more rock and roll. So AC/DC, Aerosmith, Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, the grunge era, the hard rock era, and all that that came after. Chase, there's so many milestones.
Yeah, I'm just a muse there as well.
I'm like you. Yeah, you know, I firmly believe that real musicians such or just musos, fans of music, you know, we're not bound by just any one genre of music. I think we're heavily influenced and inspired by multiple genres of music. And I, for one, appreciate all genres of music. Here's a little bit of trivia for you. When I was about 8 years old, seven, 8 years old, I took up the violin. I mean, I consider myself today a rocker. I play the drums, but back then it was the violin. I don't know why.
You broke from the norm and you didn't play the piano.
Yeah. My mother said, why don't you learn piano, son? You'd really enjoy it. And in hindsight, in retrospect, I really wish I had learned the piano because I think it's such a wonderful instrument. But yeah, for some reason, it was the violin growing up. Suffice to say, I didn't stick with it very long. It was about a year, 2 years, and I thought, nah, I'm done with this. I want something else now. And then when I got to secondary school, it was drums.
Yeah.
And it's just snowballed ever since then, man. I just love music.
Well, you're a few steps ahead of me because I can only play the triangle. And even then, it's not very good.
I'm sure. I've tried playing the triangle before. It's not easy, man. And maybe you and I can form a band, like triangle, tambourine.
Yeah, just triangle and the drums. I reckon we've got something there. Let's have a little bit of a chat about your work on Channel V. And I have to say, it's a bit of an honor for me because Channel V, when I first went to my first trip overseas, I landed in Vietnam. And the first thing I did was turn on Channel V back in the day. And I was like, wow, you know, bring me some Asian pop. I want to see what this is all about. Ironically, the artist of the week was Kylie Minogue, so all I saw was Kylie all week. But Channel V in Asia introduced me to Asian pop, and that's pretty much the start of where my passion came from for Asian pop music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm immensely thankful for that. How did that come about for you, and how did it, you know, did it change your life?
It did. First of all, I got the gig by chance, I suppose, and by accident. I was just called up one day and asked if I'd be interested in going to a casting. I didn't realize it was going to be an audition of sorts, but so I went in and, you know, they stood me in front of a camera and said, look, basically, we can't tell you what the gig is for, but if you just trust us, we need you to just speak, you know, look at the lens, speak into it, and just tell us what you love about music.
Right.
And I thought, well, this is cool.
It sounded shady until the music part.
It did. I was thinking, oh man, I don't even know what I'm here for. But as soon as they started talking about music, I was like, okay, cool. I'm in a comfort zone here.
Yeah.
And then I got called in for like a second casting. And at this point, it began to become, or began to make sense, you know, the gig and what it was. And so I went in and I actually had some script that I had to read. And it was basically, they just ripped off an episode that somebody else, another VJ, had done on a show prior. And then after that, I went in for a screen test and it became very obvious what the gig was for. And so that's how I got it. And I guess I just impressed whoever it was who was looking at the tapes at the time. And then I got a phone call saying, dude, would you like to come in and, you know, do a sort of trial period as a guest VJ on Channel V International? I went, would I? Sure. So I did that for a few months. And then one day the head of programming came downstairs into the studio and said, dude, we'd like you to come on full time. From this point on, you will be officially known as VJ Dawn. And it was great. It was fantastic because my job then entailed just talking about music.
Yeah.
Talking about what songs were hitting the charts and, you know, what songs were popular. But the cool thing about Channel V was it wasn't just about what music was charting at the time. We actually enjoyed going out into the public, whether it was in Malaysia or in Hong Kong or Singapore, and actually go to live events, you know, watch homegrown bands perform. And, you know, we'd have these shows tailor-made to unearthing, you know, hidden talent. And I think that resonated with a lot of people. It certainly did with us at Channel V. And, you know, I really enjoyed that. And as someone who, you know, growing up had different bands in high school and university, and we go to these little clubs and little bars and play our little gigs. I really appreciated what Channel V tried to do. So had a huge impact in my life because, you know, I got to follow my passion, which was music, and be a part of, you know, really delivering it, giving a delivery system to the masses all over Southeast Asia, and also celebrating the fact that there's so much hidden talent here in Asia that still has to be unearthed, in my personal opinion.
Well, that is very true. And unfortunately, unfortunately, not every Asian nation has the backing of government or like a decent industry behind them and money behind it. So much stuff just doesn't get seen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are pockets of music warriors that are out there, and they're really trying their hardest to give musicians a platform in which to build their reputation and to jump to the next, you know, to the next step of their potential careers. And, you know, my hat's off to them. But yeah, you're right. There isn't enough, I feel, being done from higher up, from industry, and like you say, from government, to showcase just these young, talented musicians. You know, what's one of the sad things that I see, and by sad, I don't mean like, you know, it's depressing or anything, but I just think it's a shame that, you know, there are so many good, I see people busking in train stations, at ferry terminals, on the streets, and just, you know, they're pouring their hearts out with their original tunes. And I think, man, if only we could go back to the days where A&R guys would walk by and say, dude, send me your demo tape. Yeah, why don't you come into the studio and show us what you got, and I can introduce you to A, B, and C. And it just doesn't happen anymore. Dave Grohl, I think, said it best once, where he's like, dude, you know, we need to get away from the realm of like the idols and the voice, which, by the way, are great. It's a really good platform to show the world what people are capable of. But, you know, back in the day, we should just jam in a garage, you know, jam in a like little studio, make a demo, send it in, and see what happened. And I don't think there's enough support on that level.
Asia Wide Hits 24/7. This is Asian Pop Radio, Jay John with Dom Lau. And we're speaking about how artists are getting seen in 2017.
One of the cool things in this day and age, Jace, is the fact that social media is so important now. You know, with the likes of Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and all that, you can walk by someone awesome on the street, film them, post it online, and who knows who's going to see that. I mean, it's potentially the entire planet's going to have eyeballs on that. And that's a great thing. It should be embraced. So to all those would-be potential, you know, wannabe musicians, you know, who want to do this as a living, as a career path, do it. There's no shame. Keep on posting up your music, man. Come show the world what you're capable of, and somebody somewhere will bite. Guarantee it.
Actually, a good friend of ours, Kim and Wong, who was busking here in Melbourne, we interviewed him, became friends, and then he went over to Hong Kong, and he was busking in the streets, and someone walked past him and said, I think I like that track. Can you come into the studio and play it for us at some stage? And then last year, it became a title theme song to a TV series over there. So you never really know, do you?
You never really know. And I love those rags to riches stories. They're really inspiring.
So who are some of the Asian pop musicians that you've had a chance to mix with over the years? And do you have any favorites?
Oh, man. You know what? It was really through my time at Channel V where I got to meet a few. I remember actually being thrown a little bit into the deep end as VJ Dom. My very first interview was actually with an artist called Coco Lee.
Yes.
From Taiwan. And wow, what a
name.
What a voice. What a name.
Yeah.
What a personality. You know, she was amazing. Still is amazing. And I remember she was already doing so well for herself. She had already performed at the Oscars, no less, for, you know, she did the Mandarin version of, and the English version of Land Before Time, I think it was for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was doing so well, and she had such a vocal range. So that was my first interview and my first foray into Asian artists. Now, I know that she performed in English as well as her native Taiwanese or Mandarin.
Yeah. Well, she was actually one of the very select few musicians of an Asian background that actually made it to the charts in Australia in the 90s with Do You Want My Love, which is pretty admirable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, she really paved the way for a lot of Asian stars today who are doing the exact same thing and following in her footsteps. So, you know, Coco Lee was one of the first. I remember interviewing Jay Chou. Jay Chou I was intimidated, let me tell you, because this guy's like, he's like the you know, Justin Timberlake of Taiwan, if not all of China as well. You know, this guy is...
I know, he's on like every building, every street sign, just wherever possible.
Yeah.
You drink a can of Coke and he's on that.
Exactly. You know, and the guy is talented, man. I mean, the guy can sing, he can, you know, he can rap, he can do... Really, he's got such a massive range of different genres that he can perform. The guy can dance, he's a really good performer, and of course he can act as well. And so interviewing him, I was like, man, I'm really intimidated about going in to talk to this guy. And he turned out to be one of the most humble, sort of just gentle, soft-spoken guys I'd met. And I was so relieved. I was like, man, this is so awesome. You're so humble, and yet, dude, you're like the biggest thing since sliced bread as far as music is concerned in Taiwan and China, and yet you're so humble. I love this.
You never really know when a difficult interview's around the corner, though, do you? You can be sitting there and setting yourself up. As soon as you see a big celeb, you're like, oh, geez, this is going to be a tough one. But sometimes it can be just down to earth and awesome, and other times, like, you know, someone can be, you know, a little bit of a diva and you don't expect it.
That's so true. But you know what? Exactly how you and I are talking right now, I think the best way, I think rather than looking at anything as an interview, I mean, even though technically it is, because you're going to be asking questions and hoping to get some answers, it's just to have a conversation, man, like you and I are doing right now, just hanging out, two dudes hanging out. You know, we might as well be in a pub somewhere, just kicking back with a couple of drinks and just shooting the breeze.
That's it. Don't overthink it too much, you say. Now, Australians might be unaware of your work with E! News. Can you share a little bit of that and the people that you've worked with there?
So after Channel V, it was announced that NBC Universal, who are the parent company of E! Entertainment, wanted to launch an Asian version of their show, E! News. So in the States, or the domestic version was hosted by Ryan Seacrest and Juliana Rancic at the time. So they wanted to do an Asian version. That was everything and anything that was happening in the world of entertainment across Asia. So I auditioned for that alongside, this is the funny thing, this is how coincidence works, alongside my former co-host at Channel V, Vijay Marian.
Right.
Her and I then became the hosts of E! News Asia.
Ah.
And that was great. It was a cool experience. Unfortunately, it only lasted 3 years, but it was such a great experience because it meant that we got to travel places a lot. We were doing a lot of interviews, a lot of junkets. And at the time, this was about 2010, even though a lot of Hollywood was coming into Asia and exploring ways to work in Asia, it was about that time, as I recall, that it really started to boom. You know, a lot of movies were wanting to film using the backdrop of Asia. And Hong Kong, which is my hometown, was very, very popular for that. It's featured in so many Hollywood blockbusters nowadays. So it meant that you had a lot of, you know, A-listers coming into town, a lot of A-list directors coming into town and being able to visit film sets and that. So it was a really fun experience working for E! News Asia.
It's quite interesting as well, because I always assume that up until that point that, you know, the Asian entertainment industry is quite segregated. Not a lot of content is shared. And only in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, it's become a bit more diverse and people in different Asian nations have become a little bit more interested in what's happening, you know, in someone else's neck of the woods.
Well, you know, this was the thing. When E! News Asia first started, I think the initial appeal was the fact that because so many of the Western stars were coming into Asia, that's what we were going to focus on. And over time, what tended to happen then was people really found more of an interest, if you like, or an equal interest in what the local celebrities were doing. So, you know, if they were filming, if, you know, in Indonesia, if Agnes Monica was filming a new music video and it was creating a stir, we'd go down there and like hopefully get an interview with her and like check the whole thing out, and people in Indonesia were loving it. Mm. Same applied into Hong Kong and et cetera and so on. I think the one problem we had, and I hope no one from E! News Asia or, you know, from the past is listening to this, but I think one of the problems back then was it was very difficult to be able to, you know, if we were going to report something on an Indonesian story, it was very hard to then gauge the interest of people, say, in Singapore or Hong Kong and vice versa, you know. So in that sense, it became very difficult to sustain. And that's why I think it only lasted 3 years. But I to this day, stand firmly by my opinion that the region still needs and deserves a show like that. Because, and especially on like an international platform, like an international channel like E! Entertainment, where what you can do is have like interstitials and just say, you know what, let's educate, let's show the rest of the region what's going on in different parts of the country, different parts of the region. So this is, you know, you could have like a little profile on, this is Jace from Australia, this is what he does, or this is Dom Loud, you know, during commercial breaks and interstitials and stuff, and eventually, you know, it's hard to ignore and people, you never know.
Yeah,
same thing as the whole busking thing, people start getting interested and, you know, it takes off.
Asia-wide hits 24/7 Asian Pop Radio. One of our little sayings for Asian Pop Radio is diversity is our thing, because we really want to try and promote different artists of different backgrounds. And we think there's a story behind every artist. So, you know, so many of the kids these days are loving their K-pop and their J-pop. And we could just do that. We could just play nothing but that. But we feel like there's a lot more for people to learn.
Absolutely. And you know what? I remember when J-pop was so huge, and it still is.
Yeah.
But it was like the only thing in Asia that people were ever talking about when music was referred to. You know, and then Cantopop. I mean, growing up in Hong Kong, for me, obviously,
true,
Cantopop was huge. So your Leon Lies and your Andy Lau's, you know, Aaron Kwok, so always so huge. And then you had Mandopop, and then you had, you know, K-pop. And I'm thinking, you know what? But there's, and you know, and it was so popular, and it crossed boundaries, because as a Cantonese-speaking person, no one understood what anything anyone was saying on a Korean song. They just enjoyed the music, which was bizarre, and it was hard to get your head around, but it worked.
Very true.
And so I think the same should apply for Tagalog, you know, Filipino bands. I mean, there's so many talented musicians in the Philippines that I've seen in my time. And it's like, you know what? Why aren't we paying more attention to what's going on in the Philippines? And the same can be said, I think, you know, on equal ground to Thailand, to Singapore, to Indonesia, and everywhere else across Asia. But thankfully, there are a lot of artists breaking ground. I mean, the Sam Willows, who are a band in Singapore, you know, they're making waves. They've gone over to Europe to tour there. They're now teaming up with producers from America and stuff, and they're really making waves. And they come from a tiny little island called Singapore, which I think is fantastic. Then you've got Luna from Malaysia, who, you know, has recorded with Usher and worked with so many talented producers like Pharrell Williams and that. And she's going out to LA and she's recording out there and she's performing out there. And man, there's so many musicians. I think Asia is just waiting to explode. If it hasn't already started, I mean, I think these are just the tremors, but it's going to explode. And like, I'm really excited about it.
It really is. And I think over the next couple of years, we're going to see a lot of stuff coming from Vietnam because that industry has just grown rapidly. Mm. Now, before we let you go, we've got to talk about Asia Pop 40 because that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
We could talk all day, Dom.
Yeah, we could. I'm loving this. Well, after Asia, after E! News Asia, I met a very, very nice chap called Rob Graham, who is the brainchild of Asia Pop 40. He said to me, this is long before Asia Pop 40 ever took off. He said, dude, I have this idea for a syndicated radio show where, you know, we base a chart off of downloads as opposed to actual physical record sales. Because nowadays, kids aren't going into Tower Records or HV anymore to buy CDs and that. They're downloading stuff. And this is at a time before streaming ever became popular as well. So long before Spotify ever came about. And the like. So, and I was like, wow, that really intrigued me because he was right. And I'm thinking, why has nobody else come up with this idea? It's genius. So he said, dude, we need a host. And I said, you found your guy. If you haven't already found one, please let me be him. And so we started 3.5 years ago now.
Yeah.
I think we're on like episode 203 or something like that. We started a long time ago now and it's been fantastic. It's been such a great ride. And, you know, we started in one market and that was Singapore, and over the years we've steadily grown into several markets including Australia. So you know, it's great. You can actually tune into Asia Pop 40 on iHeartRadio. So that was a shameless plug right there, but no, you can tune into iHeartRadio and listen to Asia Pop 40 pretty much every day, every weekend for
yes.
sure.
Yes, nice and easy, because in the past I was actually tuning into 987 online in Singapore and listening from home, so makes it a little bit easier.
Thank you. Yeah, it is closer to home. And one of the cool things for me personally about working with Rob and the rest of the Asia Pop 40 team is that Rob's from Australia himself, and he's still based there. And so it allowed me the opportunity to come down to Australia to visit, where I have really only ever gone down for work. And whilst Asia Pop 40 is quote unquote technically work, it's so much fun. We're like a family at Asia Pop 40. Rob's like Papa Bear, you know. He's the godfather. And you know, I go down there and meet up with the rest of the Asia Pop 40 crew, and I've been afforded the opportunity to hang out at the Arias a couple times already, That's just been such a great experience. Met some cool Australian artists down there as well, and just generally enjoy being in Australia. I love Australia. It's such a rad city, a rad country. And saying that, I've only been to Sydney. There's still so much more I need to explore.
Very true, and especially that you're speaking to someone from Melbourne. You have to make sure you come down here before you are. lock your arms around Sydney, right?
Melbourne is somewhere that I need to come visit. Everyone who I've ever spoken to, all of my mates who have ever gone down to Australia for a holiday or for work or anything like that, said, dude, yeah, Sydney's great, but you need to get your butt to Melbourne.
Yeah,
that's where it's
you'll at. Have to come down for Melbourne Music Week or something at some stage.
I'd love to.
But I must warn you, we drink far too much coffee and we're all very edgy most of the time.
Well, then we'll get on like a house on fire, brother.
That's it. All right, Dom, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great having a chat to you. We've wanted to do it for a very long time. Congratulations on surpassing 200 episodes. You do a very good thing for pop music in Asia, and it's been great to see it grow and grow and grow.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for the support, man. And to all the musicians out there, really, I mean what I say, continue what you're doing. Just go out there, keep on jamming, keep on playing. I don't care if you're 12 years old, 20 years old, or 60 years old. If music is what you love, then keep playing. That's what it's there for. Enjoy it, love it, embrace it. You never know what might happen.
Well said. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jace.
That's it for the Janae and Jay John show today, our daily show.
That's it. Dom Lau, thank you.
Do you like him? He's a good guy, isn't he?
I love him.
He's such a down-to-earth
to be
kind
him.
Of... Yeah. You could be. You need to speak like him, though. He's got a very deep Dom Lau voice.
I am of a woman.
Do you think you can do that?
No, because my war of hormones won't let me.
You can try.